This is my life, and I'm gonna live it the best way I can. I'ma push it to the limit. This is my life, my life, my life, my life. So I'ma keep grinding, I'ma keep hustling. As long as I'm alive, I'ma keep getting money.
Hi, this is Daniel Scott, and this is the Daniel Scott Podcast. Thank you for listening. As always, I do appreciate you choosing my podcast. I know you had many choices out there, and you chose mine, and I am eternally grateful for that. Today, this Tuesday, I am so excited about this interview. I am talking with a very dear friend of mine for about 15 years, right?
Right.
Yeah, and I've known this man for that long. I've heard his life story. He's inspired me, and I thought I need to get him on this podcast so that he can share his story with you guys. So I would love for you to welcome Stephen Fletcher to my show. Hello, Stephen.
Thank you for getting it right the second time.
I know. I call him Steve, but you guys need to call him Stephen. Yes. So how are you today?
I'm wonderful. And awesome. I'm actually very excited to be doing this. Yeah. And I'm honored to be asked.
Thank you. Like I said, you have inspired me on many levels because you've shared a lot with me. We've had a lot of great conversations.
Yes, we have.
And
a lot more to come.
Yes, absolutely. And I think that your story is a story that should be heard and shared. And that's what we're going to do today.
Good.
So great. What I like to do is I'm kind of all about having my guests talk about where they've been, where they're at, and where they're going. You know, the three big exciting things. And so I will let you start by telling us where you want to begin.
Where do I want to begin? Yeah. Can I start with a word?
Absolutely.
Regrets.
Okay. That's heavy.
It is heavy.
Yeah.
And it's significant. And it's a focal point, was a focal point of my career working with children and youth as a counselor and a social worker, and hoping to instill in them the understanding that they want to do everything that they can do to avoid getting at my stage with regrets.
Right.
I have enough of my own, so I can speak to it firsthand, that you really don't want to end up with serious regrets in your life. And if you can recognize that early enough, then you can develop the tools to guarantee that that doesn't happen.
Yeah. You know, I often wonder if things like this podcast were around when we were young and kids.
Wow. Yes.
If they would have had us, you know, steered us in another direction. When we came to that fork in the road, if we have taken the left instead of the right or the right instead of the left.
Right.
You know, so that's what the point of the podcast is, really. And I'm hoping to reach those people who are at those crossroads and they can make the right decision, maybe say, you know what, this is kind of the same thing that was happening that guy was talking about on the podcast, and he took this other route, let me take this route.
Right.
You know, so we're always hoping to maybe shift or guide people on a better route.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm good with that.
I'm good with that too.
Well, I want just for clarification, because I don't want to project at the beginning of the interview that I'm a terribly regretful person.
Right.
I do have regrets, and I'm comfortable admitting that I do. And a lot of people that I've met don't want to even admit that they do have regrets. But I think if you're mentally healthy, and spiritually healthy, the ability to admit that, look into a mirror and be honest with yourself is key.
Well, and two, you've done a lot of wonderful things with your life. So I think your regrets probably are balanced off with all the positive things that have happened as well.
So much so. I mean, my career as a social worker and a counselor was not my plan. That was not the direction I was fantasizing and dreaming of as a young person. That was to be an internationally famous singer.
Right.
Like a superstar would have worked. But seriously.
And you came close to doing that.
And I did come close, or at least to the opportunities to, as a classical musician and singer. And life leads us sometimes in directions that if you just let it lead you, it will lead you in the right direction. And as much as I had hoped to establish a career in classical music, being directed, having my life's circumstances lead me into a different path and ending up working with children and youth, I can now, you know, at 70 years old, I can sit here and say, maybe God had a plan for me that was just very different than the one I was hoping for. Right. And actually, that's okay. That's cool. Music has been a part of my life, all of my life. I mean, the key part of my life, all of my life, and still is to this day. I'm still active musically and hope to continue to be active musically. So
let's talk, let's start there. Let's start with the music. Because I know, I'm like I said, I've known ever since I've known you, music's been in your blood.
Oh, it is.
So
and it is.
You're classically musically, is it classical trained musician?
I'm a classical vocalist.
And you play the piano.
Yes, I do.
You sing.
I do.
Yeah.
What else? Like I used to, but I do.
Right, right. So talk about that. Like how did you get, I mean, how did you know you had a gift? About what age did you realize you had a gift to do that?
Probably in third grade.
Oh, wow. That young.
I was performing on stage. Actually, I performed on stage in first grade as a duet with my sister, Rose.
Oh, wow.
And we were phenomenal. And but in third grade, I started doing solo work in theaters and got recognized pretty quickly by music teachers as having something exceptional. And so from that stage on, it was just like, you know, hit the road with it. I performed a lot.
Wow.
So, and that was wonderful.
That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
So when did you get, so did you start with the piano then too?
No, I didn't. Oddly, I had the most wonderful, like I said, life just opens up and delivers things to you. And I love being open to that idea. And I think the more people can be open to the idea that to let life happen, let things come to them, don't block.
Right.
I was a sophomore in high school. I was raised in poverty. So there was no such thing as taking private lessons and stuff until I got in junior high school. And a teacher taught for free because she recognized a gift. But one evening, got a knock on our door in New Smyrna Beach, Florida, where I was living at the time. And a family said that walked in and said that they had been reading about me in the newspapers and because I was being written up often. And that they were so proud of the accomplishments I was making at such an early age. And that they wanted to offer me the use of a piano. And when I graduated from high school and left, you know, on to college, I was to return the instrument to them. But for that period of time, if I wanted a piano, I would have access to a piano. So, you know, duh. It's like, oh, okay.
Right.
So the next day they delivered the piano and I went down. We had a music store, oddly enough, in our itty bitty town. And got the John W. Thompson Piano Book Number 1 and took it home and sat at the keyboard and opened up the book and looked at it. And it had a print, you know, a copy of the keyboard. And in the middle, it's a little arrow and it says middle C. And I thought, oh, that's middle C. I've heard about middle C forever. And that's it. So I taught myself.
So you taught yourself.
I taught myself to play.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Now that is fantastic. Yeah.
And it started, literally started that way.
Wow.
And within within just a few months, actually, I was accompanying the choirs and playing at church. And so it was a wonderful gift. It was a great gift.
The journey just went off from there.
Yeah.
Wow. That's awesome.
Yes.
I can play chopsticks.
Don't.
Yeah. Oh no! And you know what? One time,
I beg you, please.
I learned Chariots of Fire as well.
Oh, yeah. Don't do that one either.
Yeah. I'm just saying.
I mean, am I.
You know. I was not gifted in the music field at all. Mm-hmm. I mean, I tried the trombone. I think I was always fifth or sixth chair. I never could get higher than that. You know, I tried the piano. My parents had me hired me a piano teacher for a very short period of time. Did not work out. I don't know.
Well, it's I think any of your listeners who are musical, who do play an instrument or sing or dance or whatever performing art,
right?
will agree with, they'll understand when I say this, because I know it sounds facetious, but I, in a kind of a sense, I mean it. I've saved thousands of dollars worth of therapy by being able to sit at the piano and work things out at the keyboard.
Right.
Like stressful things, relationship issues, the myriad personal issues that every human has to deal with in their journey. But seriously, it's like there's something magical about sitting at the keyboard, and no matter what's been going on in the day or the weeks or the months, the minute your fingers touch the keyboard, you're in another universe. You just travel to another realm. Everything else is gone. It's like it doesn't exist. And you really do become a unit of the music.
Right.
So I know that there will be people who listen to this will be like, yeah.
Well, you know what?
I know that.
No, it's funny you should say that, because one of my previous podcast interviews was with a professional football player. Mm-hmm. And he's since retired, but he said kind of the same thing is when he plays sports, he misses that one thing about, you know, unless you play sports, you really don't understand it. So it's kind of in the same realm. But that actually goes across all fields, because what you just said is kind of this for me with this podcast. This is my therapy, because I get such joy out of hearing people's stories and for them telling me. And it, when I'm doing these podcasts, I mean, I was telling my assistant earlier that I was just having a crappy day. You know, I mean, last night I didn't get much sleep. This morning I was today I'm not in my element. But once the laptop opens up, the mics come out, and I'm sitting down with a friend, it's like it completely changes. It's like everything around me is non-existent. Problems are not there.
Yeah.
It's you and
I. You're in a different zone.
Yeah. So I understand where you're coming from, even though it's not in the same, you know, feel.
Right.
But
right.
I totally get where you're coming from. And I think most people will understand, because I think everybody has that in whatever they're doing. And a lot of people don't recognize it or realize it. And that's what we hope to do.
Yeah. I would want to encourage anybody who's listening who doesn't presently take advantage of those things to do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's incredibly therapeutic. Even the listening aspect of it, just the listening can be remarkable. I was so honored to be asked earlier this year, to speak by Emory University Hospital translators, and they have a department of translators that work, you know, all over the campus, and to speak on self-care and stress management. And of course, one of the things that I talked about, you know, is using these gifts that you have, recognizing the gifts that you have and using them.
Right.
Put them to use.
So important.
Consciously, not just randomly, but consciously.
Right.
But even just sitting with the right kind of music, and, you know, everybody has a different right kind of music.
Right.
You know, what's right for me is not necessarily going to be right for the general public. Matter of fact, I can pretty much guarantee that it wouldn't be because I am classically oriented, and that's my passion.
I love
that's
classical
where my
music.
Passion is, but not everybody does.
Right.
So that was one of the things I stressed in that, and people related to it.
You know, I never realized that I loved classical music. I'm a big, big movie buff. So anybody that really knows me knows that I absolutely love movies. And where I got my love for classical music was listening to scores in movies.
Yeah.
And, you know, some of the best classical music that I've heard, it's been on a movie soundtrack.
Right.
So that's where my love for it came. Because I love all genres. I listen to rap. I listen to R&B. I listen to some country. Very, very little country, but some country.
Now, let's not get trashy about country.
No, I'm just saying. I mean,
seriously, we need to show some love and respect here for Patsy Cline.
There
is a serious voice in history.
Yes, yeah, so. Absolutely. They're greats.
Yes.
And I certainly will not attest to that. I just say that it's not my cup of tea. But yeah. We'll move on.
Okay. how that works.
So I know. So like I said, you've done a lot. I mean, I'm just wanting to just throw at you 100,000 things because
I'm just remembering all these conversations we had.
But let's continue on with the music. So
okay.
Let's talk about, because we were just talking before we went live, the Juilliard.
Yes.
So you did have the opportunity to go to Juilliard. Yes.
Speaking of regrets.
Yes.
And anybody who's listening, I would hope they really take this one to the bank. I was offered a scholarship to study in New York.
And not only accepted, but a scholarship.
A full scholarship.
Yes.
And a stipend and an apartment.
Yes. So that's a huge deal.
Yes. And because of my life circumstances, as I said, I was raised in poverty, and at that time I was literally penniless, in a relationship that unfortunately was not a healthy relationship, and my insecurities guided me to turn down the offer to go to New York because the partner in the relationship had said that if I go to New York, he would not follow and the relationship would be over. And very foolishly, I can imagine people listening and thinking, how stupid is this guy, or how insane was he? But
no,
circumstances were what they were. I had no guidance
from
anyone. Certainly not parents.
Different time, different place.
Yep. So it's that experience. Like I started with speaking about regrets. That is one of the major ones in my life. But I've taken that experience and turned it into a really positive, because I've actually used that example when I'm speaking to young people in my career. And saying, don't allow yourself to get there. It's your life.
Right.
Live it. Define it for yourself. Because honestly, you something about life is a gift.
Yeah.
For everybody. That's life's right. A gift.
Yeah.
But mostly it goes unopened.
And you know, I think you have to get to that certain age where you realize that.
I agree. I'm going to interrupt you, though.
Okay.
Because I feel strongly about this. How differently might it have been had I had mentors at an early age?
Right.
Now, mentorship today is far more common. There was no such animal when I grew up in the 50s and 60s. They're just not where I lived anyway. There just weren't. So kids were pretty much on their own to decide, unless they had, intelligent, loving, supportive parents, which I did not have. They were on their own. You're on your own in that kind of situation. So
right.
You kind of flounder. But I do think that young people can get to that point of realizing today what is the right path to follow for
right.
themselves. And to take ownership of their life.
Yeah.
It is your, every individual, it's your life.
Right.
And the decisions you make will color it. So be careful with your crayon box.
Right. I think that with the impact of social media, just all of the technology that's available and the resources, that too in itself helps people realize,
Seriously.
I'm not trying to date myself, but like I remember when AOL just hit the computer and everybody was getting those free discs in the mail to download AOL. Remember?
Of course.
Every mailbox had one.
Yeah.
And that was like, wow, you're connecting to someone who is in another state via the internet. That was just super amazing. And now it's like, it's the things that we take for granted today.
Yeah.
You
stop thinking.
Yeah. And I never wanted to be that person who said, back when I was a kid. But I say that often because I want people to realize
there's value in it.
Yeah, absolutely. And how fast it changes. It changes so fast. I'm in technology now, but I often meet people who were in technology at one time and they say to me, I did that at one time, but it just got so much that I don't know what's going on now. And things like that, life is like that. I feel like if you don't listen to your gut, you don't follow your heart, it moves so fast that
it does.
It's like a fleeting moment.
You blink.
So if you don't take advantage of these opportunities,
yeah,
you've just got to do it. Yeah. You know, you've got to do it. But I'm glad you brought up the mentorship, because I do fully believe in that. I believe everybody who has a position of power, and I don't mean power as in, you know, they're the CEO, or power as in their financial, but they've got knowledge and it can help somebody.
Sure.
It should be passed on.
It should be passed on.
You know,
it absolutely should. For me,
I believe that's common sense, but, you know, I'll take the arguments on that and the tweets and the emails about, well, they need to make it on their own, because that's the message that a lot of people say to me. No, I had to work there. I had to work. I had to do it. And you could be one of those people. You could have very easily been one of those people who said, no, I had to struggle, so you have to struggle. I did it.
Oh, no.
You did it.
That's not
me.
I know, exactly. But that's not
me. I don't understand that.
That is so not me at all.
No, it's not you. That's why we're such good friends. But yeah, I do hear that, though. And then that's why I wanted to have this interview with you, because, you know, I know your heart and I feel like I know your soul.
That's
and
true.
And our paths are pretty aligned as far as what we feel we should be giving back to the world.
As you're speaking, I'm processing in my mind, there's so much available to youth today that certainly wasn't in my time, and in yours either. When I was working at the schools, I kept thinking to myself, and I said this to friends so many times, one of the greatest frustrations of working with young people is how many kids were mad as hell. Just the anger was seething out of them, and they could no more verbalize what they were angry about than turn blue. Kids today, not all, of course, you know, I don't want to blanket it, but so many kids are just burning with anger and frustration, and they don't understand why.
Right.
Now, I think social media and the internet plays a huge role in that. So, I mean, here again, there's a balance with all the wonderful benefits of having the technology we have today. There are the challenges that we really need to be focusing on to resolve. But the anger issue with kids is a concern to me.
Right.
It's just a concern.
Yeah. One thing I've noticed, because, you know, I do a lot of young entrepreneurship programs, and I promote young people, especially young people who are coming out of the foster care system or the juvenile justice system, or aging out of the foster care system, to start businesses. Because usually they're the ones that come out with the most disadvantages as far as the opportunities. Not as many resources to, you know, go after those goals that they have.
And right.
But I will say, you know, since I've been doing that, I am so amazed at the things that come from these young minds. I mean, 17, 18, 19 years old. And I'm like,
yes, sir.
Wow, you know, that's a great business idea. Let's put a business plan together. You know, so that's, you know, I hear a lot of people discounting people because of their age, but
Big mistake. Foolish.
Absolutely.
Foolish mistake.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I used to be amazed having conversations, because I did so much one-on-one counseling with kids. And even in elementary school, some of the kids, the insights that they would have and the level of maturity that they would communicate in their language and the things that were on their mind. I mean,
yeah,
I don't remember at that age, you know, I was just thinking of what could I get away with?
Right.
You know, what kind of fun could I have after school?
Yeah. Yeah.
The kids today have got it going on. I'm proud of them.
The young man that's sitting across from us here helping us today, I mean, he's one of the most financially responsible persons I've ever met. If I had his responsibility at his age, if I was his age again, man, would I be in a different place.
I'm not even gonna comment.
I'm amazed.
This is not an avenue.
I met you when you were 23, right? I'm not gonna call him out on here, but 22 or 23. And I mean, I've just, you know, he's impressed me every year with his growth, and that's what I like to see. You know, that's when I see somebody and I get involved with someone and I just watch them grow into becoming such a better person, that's the reward of this whole thing to me. But so we're going to...
Well, I'm gonna jump in on that too, though, because we're looking at it from different generations almost in here. And you're saying things to look forward to into the growth.
Yeah.
And at 70, I'm as excited today.
I forget you're 70 because you don't look 70. So, well, thank you. I mean, sweet. You know, I'm just saying that because y'all can hear me and not see me.
But seriously, I'm as excited today about my future as I've ever been.
Yeah.
And that's not everybody feels that way.
Right.
And here again, I'm like jumping back in the conversation. This gift, there's so many choices that we get to make in this gift of life and be determined to make the right choices.
Right.
You know, open up that gift.
Yeah, yeah.
Open it up. It's yours.
Yep. And you are still always doing something.
I am having a blast.
I love it. Yeah.
Absolutely having a blast.
Yeah.
People used to ask me, oh my God, when I was getting ready to retire, they'd say, oh my God, what are you going to do when you retire? Won't you be bored? I'm like, seriously?
They obviously don't know you.
Bored is not a part of the agenda here ever. Has never been. Never will be. Just won't be.
Right.
I've never had a bored moment.
Right.
Since I can't remember a bored moment, period. But especially since retirement, I haven't had a moment of being bored.
So you went. So you were going to tell us about a story of someone that you had that had an impact.
Yeah,
I'll
try to be as succinct as I can, but it's a bit of a story.
No, go ahead.
Okay. One of the things as a counselor and a social worker, I think is consistent with others in that career. You're always asking yourself, am I making a difference? You know, am I really touching these kids? Is what I'm doing and saying, what I'm hoping to give to them, is it getting in?
Right.
Now, generally, I felt yes, because I had lots of positive feedback. But on the last year on my career, my big career, I went to lunch with a friend, a co-worker, and I walk into the restaurant, and I look across the furthest angle across the restaurant, and there is this exquisitely beautiful young woman. I mean, she was just breathtakingly beautiful, staring at me with a look that startled me, because it was a look of like she was so surprised that she had seen an alien step off a spaceship or something. I mean, you know, which I do have that impact on people. And so I'm sitting, I'm looking at her and thinking, I have no idea who this is, but I'm just certain she's going to walk over and talk, you know? And I'm
right.
like, oh gosh. So all of a sudden, at the right time, thank heaven, it dawns on me who she is. And she is a young woman who years earlier, like 4 years earlier, had been a student in my high school. Now, I won't say her name.
Right. Or the high school.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. For the listeners, I've been misbehaving in the room here.
That was
and
funny,
Daniel's
though.
Getting a little frustrated.
No, that was funny. I'll decide if I'm going to edit this out.
Or not.
But this is not. I think I'm going to let this one go because I think that was.
Okay, so I'm. It's dawning on me who she is, and I'm going to give the circumstances of my counseling with her. One of the administrators of the school one day came to my office with this young lady standing beside him, and she had a look on her face of, I can't cuss, can I?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll clean it up. It was like, oh, really, go F yourself. The look, her attitude was like, really and truly, I'm going to have to go in and talk to this old man. Seriously? I mean, she had an attitude to beat the band. It was so negative. And I thought, wow, this is going to be interesting, because the administrator says, you know, Steve, she's really got problems, and would you help, and da-da-da, this and that. So she sits down on this, I had my office really nice.
Of course.
I did it right.
Yeah.
No, I really did. And so I had a nice sofa in there for us to sit on. And we just start talking about one thing and another. And what I did with every child, now I'm not a religious person, intensely spiritual, but I'm not a religious person. But with every time I would meet with a child, I would say a little prayer asking for the right words, hoping that it would fall on their ears in the way that they could hear me. And it almost always worked. And I did the same with her when she was sitting there and I'm talking, I'm thinking, because I'm struggling, I don't really feel like I'm going to get anywhere with her. And yet I'm listening to the way she communicates and I'm thinking she really is intelligent, like probably exceptionally. And she asked a question of me about, was I one of those religious people? And I just kind of was taken aback by it, and I laughed. I said, well, actually, no, and I don't know that I should talk about that with you this way, but I said, no, I'm not, like, not at all. And I said, but I am spiritual. I do pray. I certainly believe in God. And she goes, well, I'm not. And so she told me a story that her family was atheist. They were atheist. And so I just let that go. We talked a little bit more. And all of a sudden, I got this voice in my head saying, ask her if she does figure skating or if she likes figure skating. Now, where does that come from? Really, I mean, like, where did that come from?
Right, because that's pretty out there.
Oh, that's way out there.
Yeah.
So I'm sitting there, and I looked at her, and I said, yeah, I said, I want to ask you a question. I said, I know it's going to be odd, but I'd like to ask it. And she goes, well, yeah. I said, do you like figure skating? Well, she looked just startled and looked at me a little suspicious. She goes, why would you ask me that? And I said, I don't know why. I said, I just got this thought. I need to ask you if you like figure skating. And I said, so I'm asking.
The young me would have thought that was a trap.
Well, I think she was thinking it was a trap. And I knew nothing about this girl.
Right.
Nothing. Other
right.
than she had behavioral issues and attendance issues. So she goes, well, actually, I love figure skating. She goes, I used to do figure skating competitively. Well, she had immigrated from Russia. And when she was very young, the Russian Federation, the Figure Skating Federation, had taken her out of her home and into this camp where she lived and was training to be an Olympic figure skater.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
What are the odds of that?
So go figure. Go
yeah,
figure.
Yeah, that's crazy.
So that's a prayer answered for me. I made a connection. That's like, boom, we have a connection. Because from that moment, it was like 90 miles an hour for both of us just talking da-da-da-da-da-da about this passion of hers. And so she then goes on to me. She goes, and she told her story. And it was a difficult story, really difficult.
Right.
And a very, very difficult home environment, which I won't get into, but really difficult. And so fast forward a little bit, she went back on about how, you know, most of Russia is atheist. At least she conveyed that they were. And that even talking about religion or anything was a negative. And that her family made fun of Southern Baptists. And other people who are religious people, they just made fun of them. Thought
right.
they're delusional. So now fast forward. She gets removed or drops out of school. And we say 4 years down the road. I never hear from her again, see her. Well, it turns out the young lady standing in the restaurant is this young lady. And she's looking at me like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm seeing you. And so finally, because I'm struggling trying to remember her name. And she walks up to me and she goes, you don't remember who I am, do you? And I said, oh, yes, I do. I said, you're my little Russian figure skating ballerina. And she was like so delighted. I mean, she was so happy. She goes, yes, I am. And I said, I'm so happy to see you. And I gave her a hug and she said, I'm so happy to see you. And she goes, I have to tell you something, Mr. Fletcher. And I said, sure, what? She goes, I've thought about you every single day
since I left school.
Wow.
She goes, there hasn't been a day that I didn't think about you. And how you always told me I could do whatever I wanted to do if I just believed in myself and was willing to put the work in to make it happen. And she goes, you were the only person that I really felt believed in me. And she goes, I've wanted to see you so badly. She goes, like, in the worst kind of way, because there was something I wanted to tell you. And she goes, I remember our conversations about religion, and you said you prayed all the time. And she goes, so this morning, for the first time in my life, I thought, well, I'm just going to give it a try. I want to see him so badly that I'll ask God, if he hears me, can I see Mr. Fletcher one more time?
Oh, wow. Wow.
So for the first time in her life, that morning, she prayed and asked to see me, to be able to tell me that this was her first day in college.
Oh, man. That's something else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself when I left, we carried on a conversation beyond that. But when I left that day, I thought, you know what? I was in the right place.
Yeah.
Maybe it wasn't the direction I wanted to go, but I was in the right place.
Yeah.
I did make a difference.
Right.
And so I thought, phew.
Right, right.
I got my answers.
And that's kind of what we were talking about before we went, you know, we started this up is we don't, you know, we put the information out there. We put what we want out in the universe, and then how people receive it and carry it on from there. You know, we may never know.
Absolutely.
But
absolutely.
You get the reward every now and then.
Every now and then.
Every now and then.
And that was a major one. That was yes. a major one in my yes. whole life. That was like a major, major thing.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's really awesome.
And I treasure it. I mean, I treasure the memory.
Yeah.
I just treasure
it. That's really good that you could take, you know, you've had that kind of impact on people's lives, and you're able to be one of those people who are able to take on that burden for that particular time that they're in front of you,
right,
and be able to release it so that you can go on and
live your life. That opens up a different story, because being able to compartmentalize in any field you're in, whether it's accounting,
right,
which are the stresses of that,
right,
or any kind of business,
yeah.
I mean, you've got to be able to compartmentalize. And then when you leave the office, actually leave the office and then go home and have a different life. I always kind of believed I was doing a great job of compartmentalizing and being able to deal with the really horrible and tragic circumstances I was dealing with on a daily basis, basically.
Sure.
Because as a social worker, you are dealing with life's most painful challenges.
Sure.
On a regular basis.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And so just a couple of years before I did retire, I woke up, I felt great, went to work, had a group, did a group, you know, support group that I did with some young ladies. And so I was going to, they left, I did my paperwork writing up the, you know, the assessment of the group. And then I was going to have my next group come in, which is a group of young football players mostly. And I got the names down and what rooms they were in, and was getting up from my desk to take it to a student aide to go retrieve the students. And when I got up from my desk, I collapsed on the desk, literally, physically collapsed on it.
Wow.
And I had no muscle control of my body at all. None. My vision, I had vision, but everything was swirling. It was like everything was liquid. So the room, the door, the walls, everything was like floating around in a liquid. And I couldn't make a voice to call out.
Right.
Of course, I was terrified.
Yeah,
I thought,
can imagine.
I thought, I'm having a stroke. That's what I thought. And so I got, went to the emergency room, got assessed. They wanted to admit me. I wouldn't do it. So I came home, and the next day had the same episode. It was taken from here by ambulance down to the hospital, where I stayed for 4 days in the hospital, terrified that I was dying, really believing I was going to stroke out or something in any minute. Like, I didn't even want to, like, move or anything the wrong way.
Right.
And they did every conceivable test known to mankind, and had three different specialists come to sit by my bed and talk to me about saying, your numbers, all the results, you're healthy. Everything is in the normal range, everything. So we just understand this. And they came separately at different times, and each of them said, well, what do you do for a living? What's your career? And I said, I'm a social worker, school social worker. And honestly, you know, I'm not exaggerating. Each of them said, you're killing yourself. It's time to retire. Your body is wearing out. The stress, the level of stress you've been dealing with for these decades, because right. It was like four decades for me. The stress is a killer. And no matter how committed you are, you're killing yourself and you need to get out of this.
Yeah.
You need to let this go.
Yeah.
So that was really my motivation for going ahead and you know, configuring everything to be able to retire at that time. Because I had actually, my energy was good. I loved my career, loved going to work, loved working with the kids. I loved most, certainly not all, but most of the people that I worked with. I'll be really nice and not get in about the ones I didn't love so much.
Feel free to shout out any names.
It's just us.
Right. We won't be putting up any billboards.
But I had intended to go to 70 and then think about retiring. But it was right. Like, I made the right decision. I followed the doctor's orders and made the right decision. So,
yeah, I think we get, I think everybody gets to that. I was having this conversation, you know, with him earlier. I've reached a breaking point as far as where I'm at on the technology side. And I'm hoping to transition out by the end of next year. And
okay.
So, you know, I started acting.
Yes. How exciting is that?
I love it. I love it. You know, and it's funny. I've always said I want to be someone behind the camera, that I've never wanted my face out there. Just because I just felt like, you know, really not my cup of tea, but, it's been really fun. And the opportunities that have been coming my way are just really, exciting. And I'm enjoying it. So I'm thinking that's where my life has taken me. And again, so that crossroads that happened this year, you know, and mm-hmm. I'm choosing mm-hmm. the path of the art world, arts.
You're letting it happen.
That's right. I'm letting it happen. I'm not fighting it. But I felt like starting last year, I started feeling burned out on what I've been doing for 15 years. You know, I'm just like, I realize I'm not happy doing it. You know, I'm not happy being in that business anymore. I just, you know, I like starting up new businesses. I like helping people start up businesses, and that's where my passion is, and that's where I want to go. But the whole being acting thing, well, that's just, you know, that's just fun. I mean, I'm just gonna, you know, say it. It's so not paying any bills, but
well,
it's
that's
fun.
Well, that's okay. But and paying bills is important.
Yeah,
but it can't be the single determining factor. I mean, is acting becoming a passion?
Oh, absolutely. And like, you know, like you said, my thing was a health thing. You know, I went through two major surgeries.
I recall.
And, you know, and I just realized, wow, you know, for this one right here, who was like, hey, you need to get in the gym and, you know, you need to start taking care of yourself. And that's what motivated me to start working out and getting myself in shape and, you know, eating right and just living my best life. And so now I'm trying to pay it forward by helping others live their best life. And that's hopefully what the podcast does. Because I feel like it's the platform to reach the most people.
Good.
So we Yay. Back to you, because okay. I don't want this to be about me.
No,
and I can
and
easily
I want
turn
it to be
it
all about,
me.
Let's get back to me.
Yeah, exactly.
So you have ASAP.
You have shared.
I mean, your story is precious and all, but
that's
really.
Right. You shared with us the past and the present. Share with us what the future holds for you. What are you doing now, and what's on the horizon? What's
okay.
exciting?
Well, I am just starting working with another couple, husband and wife, that dear friends, who are both exceptionally talented musicians, and be thinking about doing some performing again at retirement centers.
Oh, nice.
Which is like so positive to me. It's like,
yeah,
we're excited about it.
Awesome.
So I'm that's a new project, and it's a forward thinking project. So I'm hopeful for that. I've been invited to speak on stress and self-care again to another group of interpreters, medical interpreters, in November. So
okay.
On the same issue. So I'm excited about that, and I hope to do more of that.
Okay.
And let me see. I guess that's
you're doing podcasts.
Yeah, I'm doing podcasts. I'm getting to talk about myself.
Are you still? do you still actively work in the pageant business?
Some, not a lot, okay. Not a lot. And I'm really good with that. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. That's going to be part two of this podcast. I'm going to come back and it's going to be all about that.
Well, get ready Lady for three and four.
Yeah, because if you could have saw his facial expressions, they said all I needed to see.
Well, it's quite a community.
Okay.
Let's put it that way.
We'll leave it at that. Yes. And save that for another day.
Okay.
Very good. So we have really gone to our time.
Okay.
So I want to thank you.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm so thankful that you did this. It just felt like this 45 minutes just blew by. It really did. I feel like you've dropped a lot of information out there and a lot of positive energy. So hopefully someone will get it. The point of the podcast is to be inspired and then inspire someone. And I think you've done that.
I hope so.
Well, you've done that with me. So you've inspired me. So you've already done your part. Okay. So let's hope that I'm inspiring somebody with this podcast and you're doing the same. So thank you for joining me.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening. I appreciate it. Remember, there's a new podcast every Tuesday with a different guest. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at TheDanielScott7. And you can also visit me on the web at www.thedanielscott.com. As always, again, be inspired and then inspire someone.
My life. So I'ma keep grinding, I'ma keep hustling. As long as I'm alive, I'ma keep getting money. This is my life. My life, this is my life, trying to be the best out.